Last time we did a certain kind of reading, and I want to summarize some salient points of our discussion last time, and then go on to another aspect of Perek Yud-Chet, which we briefly touched upon last time, but didn't really get to. Let me just locate my notes here. Okay. Last time we went through the story from Pasuk Yud Zayin through Pasuk Kaf Tet through the end of Perek Yud Chet, and let's pick it up at the beginning of the story. I'll read a little bit and summarize a bit. It says as follows. Pick it up in Pasuk Yud Zayin for the moment. Vayomer Shaul David, Hinei Biti Hagdula, Meirav Ote Eten Lecha Leisha, Ach Eli Leven Chaya, Vilachem Lachamot Hashem, V'sha Amar Al Tiyadi Bo Ti Biyad Plishtim. So yeah, first have the first proposal to marry Meirav. Then, of course, as the story goes on, that, it was moved off the table. Now, one of the things that primarily our discussion last time was about characterization of the two central characters of the story of Shaul and David, respectively. And regarding Shaul, things were relatively black and white, so to speak. Regarding David, it was a bit more complicated. We'll get to that in a second. But regarding Shaul, I think we characterize his actions here as deceitful and deceptive, be kind of the way to put it, and manipulative. And he is certainly out to get David from beginning to end. And this we demonstrated in quite a few ways. If we take a look, just for example, here in Pasuk Yud Zayin, the way it ends off is Shaul Amar Alti Yadi Bo Vati Bo Yad Plishtim. In other words, he wanted the Plishtim to kill David, and that's the whole purpose of the marriage proposal is to get to the bride price, and the purpose of the bride price is to endanger David's life. Now, we saw a few different devices by which the way the Mikra emphasizes this throughout the story, and one of them is the repetition of this idea of that the Yad Plishtim should be with David. You take a look, for example, in Pasuk Kaf Aleph again. In the second proposal, the same kind of thing. And finally, yet one more time, in Pasuk Kafei, Vayomer Shaul Kol Tamul David Ein Chavetz LaMelech B'Mohar Ki B'Meya Aralot Plishtim Linakem B'Vei HaMelech V'Shaul Chashav La'Pil Et David B'Yad HaPlishtim. And Shaul really wanted to cause David to fall into the hands of the Plishtim. So, is it the fact that the Mikra gives us the internal speech of Shaul that he has a negative intent vis-a-vis David? Is it the fact that he sends these secret messengers to whisper in the ears of David to manipulate him? Is it the fact that he acts as if everything's a shame shamayim lihinokem, bo'avei ha-melech, or avei ha-shem, but it's really about getting David? It's very, very clear, Shaul's deceptive, deceitful throughout the story. On the side of David, it was perhaps, well, it was a bit less clear. And let me kind of, to some extent, summarize some of our discussion last time. I don't remember the exact details of things that all the things that people mentioned, but let's take a look at the text again. Now, let's look at David's reaction in order to kind of get a grasp on this. Take a look in when David first responds. In Pasuk Yud-Chet, Vayomer David al Shaul, Mi Anochi Umi Chai Mishpachat Avi B'Yisrael, Ki Yeh Chatan LaMelech. Who am I? Who's my family that I'll be the Chatan LaMelech? Or in the second proposal, a bit later on, in Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vayidabru Avdei Shaul Basnei David Et Advar Me'ele, Vayomer David, Hanakala Be'enechem Etchatein Be'melech, Vanochi Ish Rash V'Nikle. Is it light in your eyes to marry into the king's household? And I am just a Ish Rash V'Nikle. I am a pathetic or desperate or poor or light individual, as the case may be. So one approach possible here vis-a-vis David is to take the attitude that these professions of humility are 100% honest. And David is honest, and David is humble, and you have here kind of the conflict between black and white, right? Where Shaul is black and David is white, almost in a kind of extreme way. And why does David change his mind? Because he realizes he has no money, but one thing he can provide is the battle prize, as the bride price is battle prowess. And later on, when the price is switched from the money to the Arelot, to the Plishtim, realizes, oh, I can do that, and that's why he goes along. So it's kind of the black and white reading. And I think I discussed this with Tiger a little bit after Shir. My great hesitation about the black and white reading is that it's too black and white. It's almost lo derech hamikra to paint one character in such extreme terms: the internal speech, the deceitful messengers, the fake talk. It's Shaul is so black and David is so white. It's almost hayitachen, right? That's kind of the hesitation that I was kind of left with at the end of that way of reading the story in last shiur. Now the other way to go. Right? The other way to go was the extreme version, I think, suggested by Adin originally, which is to view David as someone who knows how to stick a sarcastic comment in this story. And I think I don't really like the reading, but I think it's fascinating nevertheless. Go back to Pasuk Kaf Gimel, where David says, "Vayomer David hanikala beinechim et chatein b'melech, v'noshi inochi ish rash v'nikleh." And we all know why I'm an onochi ish rash v'nikleh, because Shaul didn't keep his original promises of riches and wives, and therefore I've got nothing, and you know, etc. So that would be kind of David is nasty and sarcastic, and I think that's unlikely. However, there's maybe a slight middle ground here, which we began to talk about last time, which is, maybe produce it this way. Think of David not so much as absolutely humble and lowly and self-effacing, but maybe these professions of humility are, well, those are pro forma professions of humility, and someone had pointed that out last time. Gideon has these professions of humility. Shaul has these professions of humility. Whenever you mitkarev l'malchut, the form of things is you're supposed to profess humility. So you could look at David's professions as being somewhat formal here. Now, another kind of interesting way to think about this is there's an interesting parallel here in the text between Shaul and David, which means that maybe they're not exactly on opposite ends of the black and white spectrum. And let me explain what I mean by this. And I don't know if we touched upon this last time. Take a look in Pasuk Kaf, where it's mentioned there that Vatehav Michal bat Shaul David veyagidu de Shaul. And it was straight and good in the eyes of Shaul. Now, why is it straight and good that Michal loves David, right? Why is it good for Shaul? Well, it's good for Shaul for obvious reasons, because the first wife, for some reason, is off the table. But Baruch Hashem, his second daughter has fallen in love with David, so he can now move ahead with the plan. He can present the second daughter, he can propose the second proposal, and the attempt to get David to fall into the trap of fighting the Plishtim and die can move ahead. So when it says, Vayishar Hadavar Be'inav, it is certainly a reflection of Shaul's manipulative or deceitful plan, and generally the psukim seem to unfold that way immediately afterwards. In Pasuk Kabbalah, for example, why is it good in his eyes? Because now my plan can proceed. What's fascinating is that in the text here, the exact same phrase of Yashrut Be'inav, jump ahead, take a look down in Pasuk Kafdalet, when you have the Avdei Shaul readjust the bride price. Pasuk Kafdalet says, "Ve'agidu Avdei Shaul lo lemar kadver ma'ele diber David. Ve'yomer Shaul kot tamru le David ein chavitz amelch b'mar ki b'me'a arlot plishtim hinakim b've'a melech v'shaul chashav lapil David b'yad plishtim." Pasuk Kavav, "Ve'agidu Avdei David et kadver ma'ele v'yishar hadavar Bene David et Katein Bamelech." When David's mind changes, the Mikra uses the exact same phrase of Vayishar Hadavar Be'ene, which it used in Pasuk Kaf to modify Shaul. Now you could say there's an irony here, right? Shaul is absolutely black and he's manipulative and deceitful, and David has a completely different agenda of humility and self-effacingness and just wanting to marry into the king's house, and the phrase is meant to contrast with each other. Or maybe not, maybe the opposite. The same as Shaul acts with an agenda throughout the story, so to some extent, David acts with an agenda throughout the story. Because he keeps saying, no, 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 that's what you're supposed to do. And once he says no, what happens? The bride price gets switched. And once the bride price is switched from money to Arelot Plishtim, what can David do? not just pay it, but what can he do it?
Double it.
He can double it, and he can pay it fast. He can excel in both quantity and quality, right? And the Mikra is very clear about that. Take a look in Pasuk Kafav. Let's now read kind of the end here. And it was good in the eyes of David. Let's read this as being parallel to Shaul, that now his agenda can also move ahead. And that was his agenda all along. And the time wasn't even up. And he went and he smote 200 men. And it's the pun on the filling, right? He filled the order double even before the time was filled. And you realize the action, in terms of its speed, it just accelerates incredibly. There's this whole long, drawn-out negotiation where David is hesitant. No, 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 I can't. It's not right. The negotiation's back and forth. The minute the price has switched to something that's Mosechein Beinei David, the speed of the Mikra picks up. No time has passed. He goes, he does double. And the way we have the succession of verbs. Vayakam David, Vayelechu Vanasha, Vayach. Vayakam, Vayelech, Vayach. Three verbs within four words. Vayavei David et Arotem, Vayimalum Lamelech. Six, seven verbs modifying David, one after the other, which are symbolic of this quick action, as if, okay, now we can be Yotzei L'derech, the plan has been accomplished, etc. So what I'm trying to show you here is there's a second way to read the characterization of David here. Not that he's absolutely white, and he's absolutely humble, and absolutely self-effacing, and this is the battle of the black hat versus the white hat, but rather that David is to some extent, well, here are these pro forma confessions of humility, of not being ra'oi, and David manages also to somehow manipulate things to some extent. He is the equal of Shaul in manipulations because Vayishar HaDavar Beinav, just like Shaul. And eventually, once things move over to an axis in which he can excel at and show everybody how great he is, and then that which is the Arelot, then he does it double, and he does it quickly, and does it with intensity, etc. So there's another way to read David here, and I would argue that that second way of reading David here, which is mixed, right, is maybe more matim to the way the Mikra normally presents characters, unless you like the black and white reading. But I don't really know which is correct, but I just want to suggest this as a possibility. Now, what I want to show you is that there's this amazing literary parallel between this story and something in Sefer Bereishit. I already mentioned this last time. And I think when we go read that, which is important in and of itself, it will also come back to this issue of how to characterize David in the story here, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, comments or questions? Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering how you're understanding why the fact that it says Vatel Michal Ba Shaul at David.
Yeah, why does it say that?
Why specifically? Yeah. Why? And you don't have that with regard to.
That's a really good question. I think there are a lot of strange things about this story that we haven't answered yet. One of them, for example, is, why is the first wife, first candidate, Merab, moved off the table, right? We just get a strange comment here.
And also, it's not mentioned, that line is not mentioned with regards to Merab.
Yeah, yeah. And why is that Dafka, the second younger daughter, has a love relationship with David, and why is that mentioned? That's another strange, interesting question. I agree. Or the third interesting question, which we dealt with to some extent, which is really interesting, is, what's really the point of the doubling of the bride price? Is it really, really, really necessary? Now, I think you can give local answers to all these questions, but I want to try for one fell swoop answer to all the all of these issues and something that, look, I already said it last time. What you have here is this mysterious question as to why the first proposal is terminated, why suddenly we find Merab engaged to somebody else. And I think it creates a parallel with the story of Yaakov and Lavan in Sefer Bereishit in a very, very obvious way. And I already said this last time, and let me kind of explain what I mean. Let's do it from within the text, at least just to start out. Take a look in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yudzayin. Let's look here. And we're going to have to go to Perek Kaftet in Sefer Bereishit, so maybe we'll put one hand on each place before we move ahead. So what you have here in Perek Yudchet Pasuk Yudzayin is the following. Vayomer Shaul David, hinei biti hagdola Merav, oto etein lecha liisha. We have this idea of giving of a promised wife. I'm promised to give. And then what happens? Take a look in Pasuk Yud Tet. Vayiba eight tetet mirav bat Shaul. Suddenly the promised wife is given to someone else, or something happened. The promised wife is not given, right? The promised wife is not given is the second thing that happens. And of course the third thing that happens is that, a sister is given instead, right? Instead of the promised wife, the sister is given, as we see here in Pasuk Kaf Aleph. And he said to him, we explain Bishtayim as the second one, the younger one, following Rashi. Now this has to ring bells, and it has to ring bells to Perek Kaftet in Sefer Breshit. Take a look in Perek Kaftet, Pasuk Tet Zion in Sefer Breshit, and there it's familiar, but it's worthwhile reading anyway. Ulavan Shtei Vanot Shem Hagdola Le'ah V'Shem Haktana Rachel, ve'enei le'ah rakot Rachel hayta yifat tawar v'fat maret, da da da. So there's two sisters, and who's promised to Yaakov? Well, of course, in Pasuk Yudchet, vayev Yaakov et Rachel v'yomer evadcha sheva shanim Rachel bitcha ktana, v'yomer levan tov titi otach lach me titi otel isha achrei shrami. There's a promised sister that's given, or is promised, blashon titain, that will be given. Now, as we go on in the story in Breishit, we of course remember, take a look in Perek Kaftet, Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vahiba Erev, Vekachet Leavito, Veaveota Ilav, Veavo Eleha. The promised sister is not given, and the sister is given instead. So you have a common structure in both stories, right? Both in Sefer Shmuel, there's the promised sister that's supposed to be given, and she's not given, and a different one is given instead. And so too, obviously in the story of Lavan and Yaakov, there's the promised sister that's supposed to be given, Rachel, and she's not given, and the other sister is given instead. Of course, these are opposites, right? The younger, older thing is totally opposite, but I'm not concerned with that for right now. That's something we'll have to get to. Now, the interesting question is are there any other parallels besides this strange thematic resemblance between the story of the double marriage proposal in Perek Yudchet of Sefer Shmuel and the story of Yaakov and Lavan in Perek Kaftet of Sefer Breishit? Adin?
There are a couple of things. One, the older has to get married before the younger.
In both cases, they seem to know the rule that in theory the older is supposed to get married before the younger, right? In other words, in the story... What?
I mean, in Shmuel, it happens to be, it's not like said, oh yeah, it has to be.
No, but there's an acknowledgement of the normal rules of the older getting married before the younger in both cases. In other words, that Shaul talks about his two daughters, and first he's going to give BT, in other words, it emphasizes in the text here in Perek Yudchet, where he says Biti Agdola, in Pasuk Yudzayin he talks about Biti Agdola, and then in Pasuk Kaf Aleph B'shtayim Titchaten B'ayom, meaning the Sheni, following Rashi again. So it's an obvious sense that the older, the Biti Agdola, be given before the younger. And Adin is correct that conjures up or echoes the statement of Lavan in the story in Breishit. If you take a look in Perek Kaftet, Pasuk Kafvav, Lavan responds to Yaakov, V'yamar Lavan lo yasechen mekomeinu l'tet et atzira lefnei abechira. We don't give the younger before the older, so we know that the older has to be given before the younger, and I've been following the rules. So we have in both stories, the rules of older before younger are acknowledged or known by the way, which two characters? Lavan and Shaul, the father-in-law, right? And I would say that's the point of the parallel. In both cases, it's the father-in-law who's swapping out the promised daughter and putting in a different one instead, which is part of the same parallel. So one point is the promised daughter moved out and the sister put in instead by the father-in-law, and the second is the acknowledgement of the normal marriage order. Third, anything else? Now, I think there's another great one. Judah? Yes, there are the two love stories in Tanakh. It's very rarely mentioned, as was pointed out earlier. Take a look in Perek Yudchet Pasuk Kaf and Sefer Shmuel. Vateav Michal bat Shaul et David. So there's this love that occurs in the Sefer Shmuel story, and of course, likewise in the Sefer Breishit story in Perek Kaftet, Pasuk Yudchet. Vayev Yaakov et Rachel, Vayomer Vatcha Shev Shal Yaakov loves Rachel. So they're both love stories. Again, interestingly enough, opposite directions.
It never says ever that David loves somebody.
Go on, keep talking.
David specifically, I mean, like, whatever, like, I thought about this. I gave a nice little cute report at my cousin's wedding, whose name is David, that interestingly enough.
That doesn't sound too promising.
No, it's very promising.
You never loved anyone.
David never loves anyone, Tanakh, never specifically says it. But, so there's two things. One, the classic answer is that, well, he loves Hashem too much. So he can never really love a person much loves Hashem. So a nice answer, I think, is that in his name means love. Anila Dodivid Dodili, right? His name means love. So the Pasuk never has to actually mention that he loves someone. But I don't think, like, just the heat-like shoot of the fact that that David doesn't love Michal as opposed to Yaakov, who loves Rachel. I think that's just because David never loves anybody in Tanakh.
But that's not our issue right now in terms of the larger picture of whether David loves people or doesn't love people. But I just think it's a striking point where two of the weird features of the story in Sefer Shmuel, the disappearing of the promised daughter off the table and their placement, and the strange mention of love, both have these seem to echo the story in Sefer Breishit, where what I'm heading is that I think that the literary parallel between the two stories is a way of explaining a lot of the funny details of the story in Sefer Shmuel, or bringing them into focus in some kind of interesting way. Now, there's one more great one, which I want to show you guys. Yeah.
Father-in-law plans on eliminating or bad, let's say, to the
evil intention of the father-in-law. Hold off on that. That's good. We'll get to it in a second. Mayor, you had a comment? Okay. Judah? Sam? Yeah, Adin? The doubling of the bride price. Super good. Yeah, Yonatan? Excellent.
I think it's more of a thematic comparison that in both cases, somebody was promised to David or Yaakov, or David was already promised when he killed Goliath that he was supposed to get one of the daughters of Shaul, and Yaakov was also promised Rachel. And then what ends up happening, it's seemingly that Yaakov and David are passive, that they're like, oh, all of a sudden they change the Jewish, and then they're like, okay, sure. Like, that's okay, I'll work for 7 more years,
I will keep this as part of the first basic point, that there's the promised daughter that was deserved or earned, and it's swapped out by the father-in-law, and the sister's given instead. I'll keep that as part of point one. I'll list point two as the noting of the proper order in both cases. I'll list point three as the love in both stories. Point four, I agree with Adin. Well, I'm going to hold off on it because I'm going to do a different one first. The word vayimalu appears in a fascinating, unusual way in both stories. Take a look in Sefer Breishit. You should remember this. Take a look in Perek Kaftet, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. We have the following. Vayom Yaakov Lavan, va'et ishti, ki malu yamai v'avo aleha. Right? The days have been filled and I want to marry her already. Or a bit later on in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, after Lavan does the trick, he says, "Male shvua zot, fill this 7-year cycle, v'nitna lecha gam et zot ba'avoda asher tavod imadi od 7 shanim achirot." So there you have the malu there again in pasuk kavchet. Vayas Yaakov kein vayimale shuva zot. So you have the filling of time mentioned 3 times in the story of Sefer Breishit, and of course you have exactly that as well mentioned in the story in Sefer Shmuel. Take a look in pasuk kavav in parak yichet pasuk kavav. Vayegidu avadav David et advar me'ila vayishar advar be'ini David et chatei b'melach v'lo malu hayamim. The time wasn't filled, the same idea of filling the time, but vayimalum lamelech, as in malei shavuazot. So milui is, in terms of the fulfillment of conditions, the fulfillment of time, appears 3 times in the Sefer Breishit story, it appears 2 times in the Sefer Shmuel story, and that is a 4th parallel between the stories. 5th parallel, which I'm very happy I didn't quote it, some people disagree about this, but I really think it's right, the funny doubling of the bride price is a feature of both stories, and let me explain what I mean. We already are well aware of it in our story in Sefer Shmuel. Let's just kind of take a look at it again. In Perikhet, Pasuk Kafhei, what does Shaul originally ask for? Ein chepetz lamelech b'moar ki b'meya arlot plishtim hinakem b'aveh melech. 100 arlot plishtim. And of course, in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, when David goes and does it, what we read there is Vayakam David Vayelachu Vanashav Vayach bePlishtim Matayim Ish 200 Vayaved David Et Arlotem Vayemalum LaMelech Lutkatein by Melech. So the bride price is doubled from 100 to 200. Now, of course, it's a famous and well-known feature of the story of Lavan and Yaakov that the exact same thing happens. We already read the Psukim, but let's take a look at it one more time. Take a look in Bereishit Parak Kaftet, Pasuk Yud Chet. Okay, it says as follows. Kaftet Yud Chet. Vayev Yaakov et Rachel, Vayomer Evadcha, Sheva Shanim Rachel Bitcha Haktana. So the original bride price is 7 years of work. That's the Mohar, right? Well, we go on in the story. Jump down to Pasuk Kaf Zion for the moment. What does Lavan say after the trick? Malei Shvuazot. Oh, here's another 7 years. V'nitna lecha gam et zot ba'avoda asher tavod imadi od sheva shanim acherot. It started as 7 years' work, and then the day it becomes 14 years of work. So at the end of the day, Yaakov pays a double bride price exactly like David, or David pays a double bride price exactly like Yaakov. Now it's for completely different reasons, completely different ways, but the parallel is striking and almost eerie. And of course, later on in Perek Lamed Aleph, Yaakov says, "Oh, Arba'as Reshana Avadati Bishvil Abanot," right? 14 years I worked, right? So it's the same kind of thing. And I think the fifth parallel is the doubling of the bride price. Now, Anything else? Is there anything else anyone can think of besides these, what was it, 5 or 6 points? Whatever we had, right? We had, one, the general idea of the swapping out by the father of the promised order. Two, the noting of the proper marriage order. Three, the love. Four, the term milui in each story. Five, the doubling of the bride price. Was there anything else? No, I think that was it. What?
The devious nature.
Oh, the devious nature of the father-in-law. Well, I don't know if that's part of the parallel, maybe that's the point of the parallel, which we'll get to in a second, right? Because what we're obviously setting up here is that Shaul is who?
Lavan.
And David is who?
Yaakov.
Oh, this becomes very interesting, right?
That plays out throughout all of Sefer Shmuel.
Now, Yonatan is correct. There's more to this parallel. It continues on later on. And a great way to see this. A great way to see this is, think about how does the Lavan and Yaakov relationship end? Eventually, what does Yaakov have to do to get out of Lavan's house? What?
To make a breach.
No, that's before the breach.
Run away.
He's got to run away. Let's look at, just very briefly, at Perek Lamed Aleph, which is some of the running away story, because I think here there's another kind of a whole set of other parallels which complement everything we've discussed so far. Take a look in Bereishit Lamed Aleph, Perek Yudalid, for the moment. Okay, Bereishit Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yudalid. Okay, we have there is the following. Okay. Now, after Yaakov had his dream, and he tells it to his wives, Yudal to his wives. Vatan Rachel v'le'ah, v'tomar naloha od lo chelik v'nachla b'beit avinu. Oh, we have no more portion. Hav nachriot nechshavnu lo ki machranu, v'yachol gam achol kaspenu. Ki kol osha asher itzil elu him me'avinu lanu hu luvanenu, v'ata kol asher amar lehim elecha asei. So, Yaakov is supported by his wives when he says he has to run away. Pasuk Yitzayin, Vayakam Yaakov Yisa et banav et nashav al gemalim, Vayinhag et kol mekneo vet kol rechusho asher rachash mekne kinyano, asher rachash bepadan aram, bo Yitzchak aviv ratza kanan. Pasuk Yitet, V'lavan halach legzoz et tzono, V'tignov Rachel et hatrafim asher lavi astrein. She stole these trafim when Yaakov was running away. Of course, we know they come back later. V'ignov Yaakov et leiv lavan ha'arami, al beli higid lo, ki voreach hu, V'ivrachu, V'chol ashalo v'yakam v'yavar. So, we have as following. We can note three interesting points here. One, Yaakov is boreach. Two, it's with the help of his wife or wives that he kind of slips away from Lavan, right? Three, is this interesting mention of the trafim, which is not exactly clear what on earth it has to do with the story in some interesting way. Now, what's totally fascinating here is take a look at Perek Yud Tet, the direct hemshech of the continuation of the marriage story in Perek Yud Chet, and let's pick it up in Sefer Shmuel in Perek Yud Tet, Pasuk Yud Aleph for the moment. Vayishlach Yud Tet Yud Aleph in Sefer Shmuel. Vayishlach Shaul Malachim El Beit David L'Shamro Ulhamito Baboki. He went to kill him. Vatagev L'David Michal Ishto Lemar Im Ein Chamimalet Et Nafshecha Laila Malchar Tumat. Oh, you're going to die. But look at Yud Bet. Vatored Michal Et David Ba'ad Achalon Vayelech Vayivrach Vayimalet. So David is Nimlach V'Borach. David is borech from Shaul, and it's with the assistance of his wife through trickery, Ganov. Hey, remember the Ganov fist of the year, right? And now look at the next pasuk Yud Yemo. Vatikach Michal et Trafim, vatasem alamita, vet kfira izim sama mirashotav, vatachas babaged. And somehow the story of fleeing with the assistance of wives involves the Trafim, exactly like back in Sefer Breshit. And I would call this another parallel between the Yaakov Levin stories on the one hand and the David Shaul story on the other hand, the continuation of the story, the brecha involving the assistance of the wives and the trafim, and this is, I think, a sixth parallel between the stories. Now, I'll just point out this one last one, which Tig really likes. A great word appears in both stories. Take a look for the moment in Perek Yutet, Pasuk Tet Zion, when Shaul finds out what Michal had done with the Trafim and helping Yaakov escape. And take a look at Yud Tet Yud Zayin. Vayoma Shaul Michal, lama kacha, next word, rimitani. Why have you tricked me, right? So there's a conversation between two of the principals in the story that involved, why are you tricking me? Now this cannot help but conjure up the most famous conversation between two principals in a story where one says to the other, lama rimitani. Go back to Perek Kaftet Pasuk Kafhei in Sefer Bereshit. And there when Vayiba Boker, Kaftet Kafhei, Vayiba Vinehi Le'ah, Vayoma Lavan, Ma zot asita li habrochel avadati imach v'lama rimitani, right? Why did you trick me? Now, I'm not going to go through this whole complication of who's tricking who in each of the stories. Is it Lavan who's the trickster who's tricking Yaakov? Or is it Shaul who's the trickster? Or is it Michal who's the trickster who's tricking Shaul? And there are differences here. But the notion of tricksterness and Ramaut being part of both stories is another interesting seventh parallel between the two stories. And I don't think there's too much more here locally in Yudchei Yutet, but this is really significant. Now, on the literary plane, this certainly helps us understand what's going on when the promised wife is swapped out, or what's going on with this strange mention of love. And a lot of the details swim into focus in an interesting way once you look at this parallel. However, what's the meaning of the parallel? Let's try now to put our heads to thinking about the meaning of the parallel. How can we interpret this parallel? What does it tell us? What does it give us? I think there are a lot of different aspects to it. Anybody have anything to say about interpreting the parallel or meaning? Anyone have anything to say? Any comments? Ty, you want to talk? Go ahead. You talk.
I don't know. It's difficult. I would just mention it's difficult to think of Yaakov as a purely white character. If we're building this, because firstly, prior to the escape to Padan Aram, obviously he tricks his brother twice, or is Yaakov him these shtei pa'amim, and then afterwards also with the whole issue of the rods and canes tricking Lavan out of his sheep and so on and so forth. So it's difficult to be mitair Yaakov as a purely white character. So perhaps goes against that reading.
So it could be I've given too much away here. I wanted to save that as like a punchline for later. But that's I kind of tend to agree with you. We're going to get that hold off on that. But anybody else? Any other comments? Okay, I think even before you get to that, I would certainly say that if we think about the parallel for the moment here, right? It's Shaul parallels Lavan, right? And Yaakov, David parallels Yaakov, right? That's the, right? Shaul parallels Lavan, and David parallels Yaakov, and their respective daughters parallel their respective sisters. That's the way things are built here. Now, if we talked about the characterization of Shaul in our story in Perek Yud Chet, as being that he's tricky and he's deceitful, then comparing him to Lavan Ha'arami makes perfect sense. The ultimate trickster and deceitful character who swaps here and swaps there is Lavan, right? And it's exactly as Yaakov says to, you know, he says to Lavan, Lama Rimitani. Now, by the way, whenever somebody says the words Lama Rimitani, it's highly ironic, because when Yaakov says Lavan, Lama Rimitani, that echoes back to what Esav had said, what Yitzchak had said to his father, what Yitzchak said to Esav, Ba Achicha Bimirma V'lakacha Et Birchotecha, right? In other words, whenever you're accusing somebody of Lama Rimitani, that's a way of realizing, oh, you're the real Ramai, right? So in fact, in the Yaakov and Lavan story, when Yaakov says Lama Rimitani, it goes back to the fact that Yaakov is being punished by being subjected to the Ramai Lavan for his own Ramaot vis-a-vis his father and his brother. Now, who says Lama Zeremitani in the story here? Shaul says Lama Zeremitani. But wait a second. If you say Lama Zeremitani, what does it really mean? Who's the real Ramai? Whoever says Lama Zeremitani. And that's exactly what the Shaul story in Perek Yud-Kan is about. He's the real Ramai. In other words, so he's both parallel to Lavan, which is one highlighting of Shaul's Ramaot in the story in Sefer Shmuel, but also he's the one who says Lama Zeremitani, which is, of course, is the Yaakov role in the story in Sefer Breshit, but that itself shows that you are the ultimate Ramai if you are saying Lama Zeremitani to others, right? If Ramot happens back to you, that means that you're the Ramai. If Ramot happens back to you and you say Lama Zeremitani, you're the Ramai, so therefore it highly emphasizes our reading of Shaul's deceitfulness and manipulativeness here in Sefer Shmuel, the entire parallel. So I think that's one point that I would work, that I think works out really, really nicely. Yeah?
The problem with that is Lama Zer Rimitani is we're talking about a specific case, right? When he's saying Lama Zer Rimitani, right? Whereas with regards to, if you're trying to bring an example of the fact that Yaakov was in fact the Ramai, right? So, I mean, in that respect, in his previous case of Ramais, he was not, while he wasn't exactly straightforward, he didn't actually act in the same manner as Lavan did.
Who?
Yaakov.
Yeah, but this is not about Yaakov. This is about Shaul. In other words, that Shaul either parallels Lavan, or Shaul winds up accusing Michal, his daughter, of Ramaot, when he is the one who is the real Ramai, the same as there when Yaakov accuses of Ramaot, he's the one who's the real Ramai. So I think that's the point. Okay, now, all right. Now, I think there's another maybe interesting point that the parallel has to teach us, which has to do with certain interesting differences between the story in Sefer Breshit and the story in Sefer Shmuel. And let me explain what I mean by this. Take a look in Perak Yud Chet Pasuk Kaf here. Remember, who loves who? And this was already pointed out previously. Perak Yud Chet Pasuk Kaf, we have the following. Pasuk Kaf, we have the following. Vatav Michal Bat Shaul et David. So David is the object of love, right? He's the object of love. Now, in that sense, who's the object of love in the story in Sefer Breshit? Of course, it's Rachel, right? Interesting. In other words, so
it goes both ways, though, eventually, in the Yaakov Rachel story. I guess it says Kimalu Rachel, something like that. And Rachel ends up loving him back.
Okay, I understand your point about that, but I'm just saying that in the story right here, it would seem that one difference is that, whereas in the Sefer Breshit story, the hero, Yaakov, is the lover of the woman. Here it's kind of the opposite, where David is loved by Michal, and he's the object of desire. Now, what fits with that to some extent is there's another kind of interesting point. Take a look in Perek Kaftet Pasuk Yud Zayin, all right? Ulavan shtei banot, amitet zayin, ulavan shtei banot, shema gdola lea, v'shema ktana rachel, v'nei lea rakot, rachel eta, yifat to'ar, v'yifat mareh. So the one who's loved is Yifat Torah, Yifat Mareh. Of course, David is one of the only other people in Tanakh described as Yifei Torah, Yifei Mareh. Take a look in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Mem Hei, which was where Goliath said it, of all people. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Mem Hei, no, Mem Bet, I believe it was, right? Ve'abeta Plishti, So they're both Yefei Mar'eh. So David is like Rachel in being Yefei Mar'eh. In other words, that there's one difference in the two stories, where in the story in Sefer Bereishit, it's Rachel who is the object of desire. In the story in Sefer Shmuel, it's David who's the object of desire. He's the one who's loved, and he's the one who's Yefei Mar'eh. Now, another difference, think about this for the moment. In Sefer Bereishit, is the trick or is the deceitful father-in-law successful?
In Bereishit, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. As opposed to, well, that's later, in the beginning, in Perek Kaf Tet, the deceitful father-in-law is very, very successful in Sefer Bereishit. Masha Ein Kain, that's not the case at all here in Sefer Shmuel, in Perek Yurchet. What's the agenda of the deceitful father-in-law in Sefer Shmuel?
Have David killed
by he wants him killed by the Plishtim, but he's not successful at all. David brings the double bride price, he kills the Plishtim, and... I'm confused. Hold on a second. He brings the double bride price, and he's successful. And take a look in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Kavchet. Vayash over Yadek Yashemim David Michal Bat Shaul Av too. It's total failure on Shaul's part, because Shaul now sees that what had happened, and he knows that Hashem is with David, and Michal loves him. So it wasn't successful. And the story in Sefer Shmuel ends with the lack of success of the deceitful father-in-law. So I think there's a kind of double contrast between the two stories, besides all the parallels. First, in Sefer Bereishit, it is the male character or the hero who is the lover, not the object of being loved or the object of desire. And here in our story, it's David who is the object of desire, etc. A second contrast is that in Sefer Bereishit, the deceitful father-in-law is successful, as opposed to in Sefer Shmuel, the deceitful father-in-law is not successful, and his plan crashes and burns, and David manages to bring the bride price, and also even Shaul has to confess this in the end of the day, etc. Now, what to make of this? I think part of the parallel or the distinction here show the fact that David is protected from the deceitful father-in-law, right? He is the special one, and despite all the machinations of Shaul / Lavan, it just doesn't work. And the reason why it doesn't work is because, well, I think we could say this one of two ways. Because God is on David's side. And exactly that's what Shaul says in Pasuk Kafchet. The reason why the machinations and all the deceitfulness doesn't work is precisely because God is with David. And this is a kind of sign of divine providence, that David is the desired object, and the deceit is not successful, and God is with David, etc. In other words, in the parallel between David and Yaakov, who comes out looking better on some plane?
No.
No, in the parallel between David and Yaakov, right? David and Yaakov parallel each other. Who comes out? David, because he's the object of desire, and the machinations and the deceit does not work against him, as opposed to the case of Yaakov, where he's the desirer, and the machinations do wind up working against him. Yaakov pays the double bride price because he's tricked into it, and Yaakov gets the wrong wife, right? In David's case, that's not at all the case. He's not tricked out of anything. He doesn't really have a preference which wife he gets. And he pays the double bride price as a source of strength and a demonstration of his prowess, not because he's tricked into it. So despite all the parallel between Yaakov and David, there's also a lot of contrast here, which are all symbolic of the providence that accompanies David. Now, by the way, when you think about it, why is it that that same providence doesn't accompany Yaakov back in the story in Sefer Bereishit? Why is it that Laban is successful at tricking Yaakov back in the story in Sefer Bereishit? Why is he the one who has the love that he gets the wrong wife and is tricked and etc.? Why? Because much of the story of Sefer Bereishit is about Yaakov deserving being subjected to the trickster Laban because of the tricks that he had pulled on his own father and brother. So in other words, the providence theme cuts in two different directions in two stories. By looking at the Yaakov story, we see how the result for David is better, and obviously that divine providence accompanies him. By looking at the David story, we see how the result for Yaakov is worse, and obviously divine providence runs against Yaakov in the story in Sefer Bereishit. So this is a kind of second and third point about the meaning of the parallel. I mean, in addition, that it highlights Shaul's deceitfulness. Point two, we see here a clear theme of David escaping the trickery to some extent, or coming out as a desired one, or winding up with a wife that he's perfectly pleased with, etc. And the fact that the deceit doesn't work against him, and he pays the double price as a sign of prowess, not as being tricked into it, is a sign of providence accompanying him. Which leads to point three, that we see reading back to the story in Sefer Bereishit, that Yaakov is subjected to the trick and winds up being on the low end of things, again, for internal providential reasons of Sefer Bereishit, that Yaakov fundamentally deserves it. Okay, yeah, Adin.
At the end of the day, David is tricked. He was promised the oldest daughter, and he doesn't get the oldest daughter.
Like, but to no ill effect on him.
Maybe. To say that, also, I think Chazal made the parallel even stronger when they say at the end of the day, Laban's goal was not to get some monetary thing out of it, but at the end of the day to kill him. With you have Armiel and Avi, and then you have him. You clearly see that at the end when he's chasing after him, that he's trying to. They interpret that not as him trying to get his daughter back, but rather he's trying to kill him.
Okay, there might be an additional aspect as to why it causes Chazal to interpret Lavan another way. If Shaul clearly wanted to kill David, then you have to say that Lavan wanted to kill Yaakov as well. That's an interesting point. That could be. That's a good idea.
The providential point, the divine providence is much, much more obvious in the Yaakov story, where before he leaves to Haran Rol, he had this whole deal with.
I'm not going to go into a whole argument how to read the story in Sefer Bereishit. I think it's clear and a relative matter of conventional wisdom at this point that the fact that Yaakov winds up being tricked by Lavan has something to do with his tricking previously. And I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go into all the details of that. So I want to move on. I want to make one last point before I go. I'm not going to argue about. I'm sorry, Adin. One last point about the parallel here before we have to end. So I want to go back to Tig's point and the question of the two readings that we talked about in Perek Yudchet. I think there's a kind of fourth implication for the parallel between Lavan and Yaakov on the one hand and Shaul and David on the other hand. And this also has to do with characterization. Remember, point one was about characterization of Shaul. Points two and three were about the different workings of divine providence in the two stories. Point four is again about characterization, this time about David. And let me kind of explain what I mean by that. Take a look back in Sefer Bereishit. In the later story of Perek Lamed, Perek Lamed Aleph, of Yaakov and Lavan. If we go back to Bereishit Perek Lamed, let's pick it up for the moment in Pasuk Kaf Hei. Right? In Perek Lamed, Pasuk Kaf Hei, we have the following. Okay. Vayi kasher yelda Rachel Yosef Ayom Yaakov Lavan Shalcheni Ve'alcha El Mekomi Ula Artzi. Let me go. Tanat Nashai Ve'tiladai Asher Avadati Otcha Behen Ve'alcha Ki Ata Yadat Et Avodati Asher Avadaticha Ve'yomer Lavan Im Namatzati Chayim Benecha Nechashti Ve'yiracheni Hashem Begalecha Ve'yomer Nakvas Chacha Alai Ve'atena Ve'yomer Lav At Yadati Et Asher Avadaticha Ve'et Asher Hayamik Nechaiti Ki Ma'at Asher Yalecha Lefanai Ve'yifrotz Lerov Ve'yibrach Hashem Otcha Lerogli Vata Mataya said, da da da, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayomer, Ma etain lach. What should I give you? Levan said. Vayomer Yaakov, Lo titini muma. Don't give me anything. Oh, these protestations of innocence. Im taseli adavar hazeh, just this little thing. Ashuva eret zoncha eshmar. Evar b'chol zoncha. Hayom haser misham kol se nakod v'talu v'chol sechom b'kvasim. B'ksavim v'talu v'nakod b'zim v'yaschari. ואנת ביצית קתי ביום החקי תבוא על שכרי לפניך, כל אשר איננו נקוב ותלוי ביזם וחום, בכבשים גנוב הוא איתי. ויאמר לבן פסק למדלד, הן לו יהיה כדברך. So Yaakov, in the salary negotiations, asks for nothing. Just the funny spotted speckled ones. Umah. And Lavan says, okay, that's great. Great deal, right? So Lavan thinks he's got a good deal. And Yaakov agrees to, like, how many speckled spotted sheep are there? They're like none, right? And Yaakov says, and anything else that's not speckled or spotted, it's Kneva. And so Lavan, I got him again, right? I'm going to get away with nothing, Lavan is convinced. But it turns out, although Lavan thinks he's going to get away with nothing, right? Because he's the ultimate trickster. At the end of the day, who's got one up his sleeve in the case of Lavan and Yaakov? Well, we all know the answer. It's Yaakov who's got one up his sleeve. Take a look in Pasuk Lamed Chet. The trick stick, the stick trick. Vayatzeik et ha-maklot asher pitzel baratim b'shkotot tamayim asher tavon ha-tzon l'shtot anochach ha-tzon v'yechan mevon l'shtot. So he puts the sticks in front of them. We all know what happens. They're all born in accord with the schar of Yaakov. Take a look in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Vayishma et divrei b'nei Lavan le'mor lakach Yaakov et kol asher l'avinu me'asher l'avinu asat kol ha-kavod hazeh v'yay Yaakov et p'nei Lavan v'inei imenu me'okitol shilshon. In the end of the day, why does Yaakov have to run away? The end of the day is because Yaakov has to run away because he basically pulls this mahalach or this trick or this deal on Lavan, and he arranges this very, very good schar for him, and that's what creates the absolute disruption of the relationship. Now, Tig was right before. In terms of the characterization of Yaakov, we know who and what Yaakov is all about. Mitzad echad, he's the Ish Tam, right? He's absolutely innocent, right? He's just doing what his mother tells him to do, or he's just getting the schar that's rewarded to him. And Mitzad Echad Yaakov is Ish Tam, and he's absolutely innocent, etc. Mitzad Sheni, Yaakov is often, it turns out, the equal of Lavan in some sort of interesting way, and he knows how to pull a trick or manipulate as need be. And Yaakov is this fascinating character of the Ish Tam who knows how to manipulate and to get what he needs to get in the end of the day through some sort of means. And that's one of the fascinating things about Yaakov and the character of Yaakov. I would argue that David is exactly the same way in Perek Yudchet, and that is a fourth additional point of meaning in the parallel that we've noted. Just as Yaakov is the Ish Tam who knows how to manipulate things and achieve his goals, in the end of the day, so too David is exactly the same way. He too is, he's humble, he's self-effacing, but at the end of the day, he knows how to arrange things that he winds up getting the wife who's marrying into the king's household as needs be. This is kind of a theme, I would say, in David's life that's set up here. And Mitzad Echad, he's humble and he's self-effacing and he's the Ish Tam like Yaakov Avinu. Mitzad Sheni, there's other side to his character where he knows how to move ahead and achieve the things that he needs to achieve. And this is kind of a part of a general theme we've seen about David here and moving forward. Okay, stop here.